Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome on into this week's La Liga Lowdown Matchday Recap with myself, Hugh McDear, hosting, and with all of our expert guests who are coming up. As always, we're also rebroadcast on Sirius XMFC 157. A lot happened in La Liga this weekend. The teams at the top all won and we'll be discussing them, looking at Barcelona and Sevilla in depth ahead of their Champions League matches this midweek. But we're going to start with a team at the opposite end of the table, Elche. They played in the first fixture of the weekend on Friday night and lost 3-1 at Celta Vigo. A Santi Mina brace and a goal from Brais Mendes did the damage, even if a big mistake from Celta goalkeeper Ruben allowed Emiliano Rigoni to pull one back for Elche. By losing this, it made it 16 La Liga matches in a row without a win for the newly promoted side, and that was enough for coach Jorge Almiron to resign. He came into the post-match press conference. This is what he said. I'm going to keep it short to avoid speculation and everything. I've taken the decision to not stay on with the team. I wish the players and all the people I know the best. There's not much more to say. And that was it. He was gone. And Ferran Escriba is hired as the new coach. Almiron didn't say much, but I know someone who does have a lot more to say about it. And that's Elche fan Keith Farnan. I know you were in the Almiron out camp, Keith. So what was your reaction when you heard he'd resigned?
Well, first of all, my initial reaction was one of relief and hope. Hope that there is now maybe a chance that we could actually survive relegation this season. But the more I actually thought about it, the more I felt that I was slightly annoyed that it took 16 winless league games for Almiron to leave the club. And the fact that he had to resign, and I fully credit him for doing that because it's a rarity in the modern game. And without him doing that, I actually doubt the board would have changed anything. And that really worries me because it makes me feel like perhaps Bragarnik holds the interests of his clients above the interests of his club. And that, for me, and for, I'd say, most football fans across the world, is just not a sustainable way to run a football club. And it can't persist.
Now that the Almiron project has come full circle, does that change your opinion of the summer decision to sack the promotion-winning coach Pateta in any way?
No, definitely not. I came onto this podcast a few weeks ago and I said that Pateta was thrown under the bus by our board, and I fully stand by that statement. I think the way he was treated after he'd done such an incredible job pulling off that miracle promotion, as I said, was a terrible way to treat him. And for the board to then go and to replace him with Almiron, who at the time had no experience in Spain. Obviously, he's had his season with us and it's not worked out well. So that decision just looked worse and worse as the weeks went by. And if you now look at what Pateta is doing with Huesca at the moment, and although they have lost their last two, albeit to Real Madrid and Sevilla, they are improving majorly. And they look like there is a chance that they could stay up now, which they didn't. Looked like they had a chance before. But hopefully, with Ferran Escriba coming in, he can turn it around and have a similar and even better effect on us. He has kept us in the division twice before, points-wise. Obviously, the second time there was that issue with the financial side of the club. But I am really hopeful for the rest of the season under Ferran Escriba.
Yeah, exactly. So, Escriba is the coach who's been hired to replace Almiron back at a club where he had some of his greatest success, What exactly do you think you'll bring to the team?
Well, I am extremely excited that Fran Escriba has come back. He knows the league very well and he also knows the club really well, as does his assistant, David Gennaro, who was a great player for us. So I am very happy that they have come in. And I also feel that Fran Escriba will believe that he himself has a point to prove, that he is still a La Liga level manager, especially after his stint at Celta Vigo ended so shortly. But I also think that we could stay up, but even if we are still to go down, which a lot of people, with good reason, believe we will, lack of investment in the squad and lack of quality from most views. But I think that Fran Escriba, personally, I think he could keep us up. But even if we are still to go down, which a lot of people, as I say, believe we will, I am confident that Fran Escriba would be able to rebuild us and hopefully bring us back up in a year or maybe in 2 years. But overall, I'm extremely, extremely happy that Fran Escriba has come in. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the season now. So hopefully we can kick on now and hopefully we can stay up.
Okay, thanks, Keith. There's obviously always different views among each fan base, but you do get the sense that most Elche fans share Keith's views there on how it really was time for Almirón to go. And now there's that flicker of optimism. Elche, remember, they're only 3 points from safety. They could still do it. And if they do, it would be just the latest miracle at this club, with several of them in their history. Our latest episode of our podcast series detailing the histories of each La Liga club, it's actually the one about Elche, so maybe check that out if you're interested in knowing more about the club. It's on LaLigaLowdown.com and also linked on our social media. So, Almirón is gone and he's the fifth coaching casualty of the season. In terms of who the next one will be, many think it could be José Bordalás at Getafe. They lost 1-0 at home to Real Sociedad at the weekend and they've now not scored in 449 minutes of football. They've lost 4 and drawn 1 of their past 5. And for the second time in 3 matches, Bordalás was sent off to the stands, this time for a confrontation with the Real Sociedad players Ander Barnechea and Carlos Fernandez. He had some angry post-match comments too, calling for respect. It's all getting quite tense in Bordalás land, but here's the thing. Unless something major changes behind the scenes, and you never quite know with Getafe, I mean, that could happen, but unless something major changes, then it's unlikely he'll be sacked. Getafe just don't have the money to pay him off during the season, and sporting-wise, they're not that much in trouble. They're 14th in the table, remember, but yeah, it's certainly a situation to keep an eye on. We're now going to turn our attention to the top of the table, and let's go to the very top, to the league leaders Atletico Madrid. Their 2-1 victory over Granada is the subject of our sore throat game of the week this week, and Rory Barlow is going to talk us through that game and the best commentary clips now.
After conceding late on Monday and drawing with Celta, Atleti will have been keen not to show any chinks in their armour as they travel to Nuevo Los Cánones to face Granada on Saturday afternoon. It was a tight battle between two of the best organised sides in Spain, and despite Luis Suarez hitting the woodwork, it was an even contest until the deadlock was broken in the 63rd minute.
El Atlético de Madrid la quiere Carrasco, Carrasco para Coque, Coque tiene posición de disparo pero no se atreve, mete por dentro para Llorente, chuta Llorente, gol, 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 gol.
Rubén Martín describing Marcos Llorente's fine finish, which Rui Silva couldn't keep out. Llorente is fast becoming one of the most decisive figures in La Liga this season, with 7 goals and 7 assists already. Granada were by no means done yet. Just 3 minutes it took for this to happen.
Santander, la mejor liga del mundo.
El saque de esquina no lo defiende bien el Atlético de Madrid. ¡Qué listo es Jorge Molina! ¡Qué listo es el alemín!
¡Qué listo Jorge Molina! How clever, Hugo Condés of Onda Cero said. He brought the ball down in the box and slid it across for Yangel Herrera, whose deflected effort found its way past Oblak. All Atleti's hard work was undone, and now they had just 25 minutes left to find a way for a stout Granada and avoid dropping points again.
Central y lateral, retrasa Llorente para Correa dentro del área, Correa abre el disparo, chuta, gol, 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 gol,
¡Gol!
Al revés. Parecido.
¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Del líder! Le favorece el rebote a Correa. Buena jugada, Bersálico, Llorente. Llorente atrás, Correa, chuta, sale mordido, despista a Ruiz Silva y lo convierte en una vaselina. Vuelve a adelantarse el Atlético en Granada.
Goal for the leaders. Llorente involved again. Correa's shot was deflected by Vallejo, coming out chewed up, as Martin put it, looping into the far corner to give Atleti the lead. Granada pushed, but couldn't break Atleti down this time. Their indomitable spirit has been crucial, and there were plenty of positives from this performance, as they go into one of the biggest games in their history against Napoli on Thursday. It doesn't change the fact they haven't won in La Liga for over a month now, which has to be a concern for Diego Martinez. Simeone, meanwhile, charged down the tunnel at the final whistle in celebration, which shows the magnitude of this victory. Their versatility has been a major talking point this season, but Atleti's grit and ability to suffer will still be at the heart of any success, as it was here. In November, Kiko Narváez wrote that Atleti are wearing the face of champions. They're starting to look pretty comfortable wearing it.
Thanks for that, Ruri. And that then brings us to the end of part one of this episode. But don't go anywhere. We've got Barcelona and Real Madrid's wins to discuss next. That's coming up in part two, just after this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome back into this Matchday 23 recap podcast. We're looking back over the latest round of La Liga action, where one of the most attractive looking fixtures was Real Madrid versus Valencia, but it was over before half-time really, because Benzema and Kroos scored one each for the defending champs. We've got our Valencia correspondent Paco Pola joining us now, and Paco, it was 10 Real Madrid shots and 0 Valencia shots in the first half. It could hardly have been more one-sided, so how frustrating was that to see as a Valencia fan?
Well, it was possibly one of the most disappointing first halves of the season, especially if we assess the attitude Valencia showed during the first 45 minutes. I can't really express with words how plain angry watching the team just wander around in the pitch made me. It seemed a preseason game, a training session exercise. Real Madrid players didn't even break a sweat, while Valencia players didn't press properly, they didn't pass the ball properly, they didn't recover the ball properly, and they didn't defend properly. It was very painful to witness, and the feelings were pretty rough to describe.
It was a little bit more even in the second half. What changed?
Not really that much. Remember that Javi Gracia was absent from the dugout due to a one-game ban, and he was watching the game in the stands. Zigor Aranalde was Valencia's head coach in the game, but you could sense the subs at halftime made sense in Guedes' case because he had a horrible first half, but I didn't really understand why Vallejo was benched, as he was one of the few players who really showed effort and tried to get the team back on their feet. But as I said earlier, the subs didn't really change the pacing of the game. Very slow, with Valencia cowardly hidden in their own side of the pitch, Real Madrid easily moving the ball around, keeping their energy levels in check, and not really needing much to win the game. Only Maxi Gomez tested if Courtois was paying attention, and the keeper made a great save, but that was pretty much it.
Several of Valencia's January signings featured in this game. How do you think they did?
The only one who played the 90 minutes was Francisco Ferro, the Portuguese centre-back, and he was, well, I guess okay. Nothing really outstanding, nor really big mistakes. He's very young, remember, and he had to play because Guillamón was banned, Diakabi is still injured, and Mangala is chronically physically handicapped, let's put it that way, so I would give Ferro a pass. Oliva came out mid-second half, and again, he didn't really improve nor worsen the team. And finally, striker Cutrone came in the last 10 minutes, so he didn't really have time to make an impact on the game. All around, Valencia's performance was very bad, so we shouldn't judge these players based on such bittersweet debuts for most of them.
So Benzema and Kroos were the ones who got the goals for Real Madrid, and they were both really nice goals. Which one was better?
You see, I think Benzema's strike was more proficient technically, but it's true that he had quite a lot of time to control the ball and a lot of space to execute the finish from outside the box. Valencia's defenders were incredibly tame, and that lack of aggressiveness made Benzema's task much easier. But if we talk about the second goal, Toni Kroos finished with class too. So again, very easy for a player with such quality.
Is the title race over in your view, or do you think this Real Madrid team can still win it?
I don't really see Real Madrid with the same consistency as Atletico. Whenever Cholo's men have a bad day, they still manage to pull off the win. Regardless of having good, decent or bad games, they still pick up the points. In Real Madrid's case, I think it was very smart for them not really shifting gears and increasing the effort against such a poor Valencia side, because they had a two-goal advantage and it was more than enough for them. But I don't see them being that comfortable in the next few games coming up in their schedule. I actually see Sevilla possibly, or even Barca, in better shape nowadays than Real.
Okay, thanks Paco. From Real Madrid, let's move over to Barcelona now. And they also had a very comfortable win, thrashing Alaves 5-1 at home on Saturday night. It's time then to bring in Roman de Arquer to discuss this big win. How nice was it to finally see Barca win without suffering at all?
It's definitely good to see that the team doesn't have to keep an eye out on the clock right until the end, or Koeman doesn't have to bring in an extra centre-back to defend the results. So it means that things are working and the team is going the right path. But I have to say that personally, I don't mind suffering that much, because it helps you appreciate the wins a lot more. You know, it helps you cherish the results, and it's obviously a strange season for Barcelona. They're going through this sort of transitional period, we could say. And after being used to winning game after game, maybe you'd lost a bit of that passion, but now you're just praying your team wins every single weekend. So it's also part of the emotional side of football, I guess.
We saw another two goals from Trincao, which is, well, I mean, I guess it surprised me. And then two more goals from Messi, which isn't so surprising. Messi really seems to be back to his best, doesn't he?
He does indeed. I mean, Messi's performance was fantastic, possibly one of his best this season. And just those two goals were absolutely wonderful. I mean, The shots, you know, the precision, the accuracy in those shots is something that he was lacking not long ago this season. You know, he was missing these classic opportunities he generates when he runs across the box and just curls it in. And they were just never, you know, going to the right place. But this game, you know, those two shots were fantastic. He had some other great opportunities. He generated, of course, some of the other goals. So I think this is the Messi we need, and it's important to have him at this level in such an important moment of the season, because we're going to have the Champions League coming back, and we have to avoid dropping points in La Liga. We want to have a slight chance at winning, which I think is basically impossible. More like to defend that second position, I'd say it's important to have this Messi. And of course, he'll be needed in the Copa del Rey game against Sevilla on the second leg.
Alaves' only goal came from a bad pass from 18-year-old Elex Moriba, who was making his La Liga debut for the first team. But how do you think he played overall?
I liked him. I mean, I think he had a good performance. He was brave. He was moving forward in attack. And in the end, because of that, he got his assist for Trincao's goal. So, I mean, Ilyax had a very interesting game. Unfortunately, he did give away that pass. That was a mistake. Maybe he was a bit too relaxed at that point. Things were going well for the team, and he felt too comfortable, I'd say. So it's good that he makes these mistakes now, you know, to keep him on his toes, to keep him aware of the situation. I'm sure that he's going to learn from this, and in the future games, you know, he won't maybe space out or relax too much. He'll be concentrated all the way through, and he'll make sure, you know, all his passes are pinpoint, and he improves in that aspect. So it's no problem that he made a mistake. These things happen. Fortunately, it wasn't a terrible thing for Barcelona because they won the game. So it's good that Koeman trusts these kids and gives them opportunities in the first team. We've been missing that in Barcelona.
And now it's PSG next on Tuesday. What's the mood in Barcelona ahead of this Champions League game?
As you may imagine, the mood is positive, especially after that good performance against Alaves we were talking about. The team looked really good offensively, and that's something we've been striving for, and we're getting there. But a few hours before the game, let's not forget that Barca were still thinking about that defeat against Sevilla in the Copa del Rey. And it has to be said that Barca are struggling a lot against the better sides, and PSG is one of those better sides. And even if Neymar isn't available for them, they still have a lot of firepower in attack. And we all know what problems Barca has in defence, with Umtiti and Lenglet underperforming, and then the injuries of key men like Araujo and Piqué. Although apparently they're willing to take the risk and play the game and force themselves through. But of course, that could aggravate their current injuries, which is a risk the doctors, the club, the players are considering. And we won't know right until the end what happens in that case. But if they're not available, it's definitely not a positive thing for Barca for the match itself, because we all know that PSG are an incredible team in attack and very, very dangerous. So the mood is slightly better, definitely, after that win against Alaves. And hopefully Messi's good form and the team's good form in that game can kind of, you know, drag along into this Champions League match.
Thanks, Roman. So yeah, Barcelona are in action against PSG at home on Tuesday. And by home, I mean actually at home, not in Bucharest or Budapest or somewhere further afield. Sevilla have the home leg of their last 16 tied too. They'll face Borussia Dortmund on Wednesday. So let's get the Sevilla lowdown too by speaking to Chris Lail of the Monchi's Men fan page. Sevilla just defeated Huesca 1-0 on Saturday with a Munir El Haddadi goal, and they achieved this with a lot of players rested. So Chris, how good does it feel to take another 3 points in this way?
This Sevilla team is on a really great run right now. Winning 5 straight in La Liga and 9 straight overall has been amazing. This accomplishment has been done without some of the best players too. Both of our starting fullbacks, Jesus Navas and Marcus Acuna, both went down with injuries in the Eibar game back on January 30th. And of course now we're facing our third match without Ocampos due to his injury in the Getafe match. Hopefully we can continue this run of form with a more complex schedule coming up.
For sure, and who would doubt that Sevilla can keep this up? It's not just that they're winning, but they're not conceding. Just one goal conceded in this run of 9 wins. A major reason for that is the goalkeeper Bono. How good has he been of late?
Bono for sure deserves credit. However, I hate to give him all the credit because of just how good those around him have been. Koundé has been getting a lot of the credit this season, but the defense doesn't work without Diego Carlos being the muscle and Fernando cleaning things up in the defensive midfield. With that said, you can't deny the impact Bono has made since taking over as keeper last season when Vaklik went down. He has great reactions, and he's been much more commanding of the box as of late.
Yeah, Koundé, of course, is standing out too. So how excited are you to see Koundé versus Haaland this midweek?
We mentioned this on our Sevilla podcast about how excited we are for this matchup coming up. Koundé and Carlos versus Haaland. I think that's like a headlining boxing match you would just want a marquee. It's really the key to our success in this tie, I think. Haaland provides that unique ability to get behind players with his sneaky pace combined with his physicality. He could be a challenge, much like Lukaku was in the Europa League final last season. I do believe our defense has improved since that final, and I would put my money on Koundé and Carlos putting Haaland in their pocket during this tie.
What are your general thoughts about this tie? Are you confident, Chris?
I don't know why we shouldn't be confident. I mean, Lopetegui has this team playing very solid, disciplined football, and our playmakers are starting to show up as well. You know, Suso, Rakitic, Jordan, and Nesri, and now Papu Gomez have all come into their own in the last month and starting to gel, and things seem to be clicking. Combine that with the Borussia Dortmund's recent form, Sevilla fans have to be confident. With that said, Dortmund still has a ton of talent and some dynamic players that can ruin your day very quickly. The fans are excited and really looking forward to the Champions League and continuing our run in La Liga and Copa del Rey.
Thanks, Chris. We've got a really exciting midweek of European football ahead. Then there's Europa League 2, which for once won't feature Sevilla, but we've got Real Sociedad facing Manchester United, Granada playing Napoli, and Villarreal taking on RB Salzburg. Villarreal, though, come into this game in iffy form. They've now failed to win in any of their past five in La Liga, losing 2-1 against Real Betis on Sunday as Manuel Pellegrini returned to La Ceramica. Even with Villarreal being gifted a penalty, and gifted is the word, and with Gerard Moreno scoring it, they couldn't come back to overcome the goals conceded to Nabil Fekir and Emerson either side the half-time. A big win then for Betis, but real disappointment for Villarreal. The last two games that we've not mentioned yet are the ones that could have a really big impact on the relegation battle when all's said and done. Eibar and Real Valladolid are levelling points at the edge of the relegation zone, and they faced off on Saturday. An early Rocky Mesa penalty was cancelled out by Kiki Garcia's seventh goal of the season, and that was how it finished, 1-1. Eibar coach José Luis Mendilibar was asked before the game if he considered this one to be a final. "Not at all," was his reply. As he pointed out, there's another 15 games to go, but this head-to-head meeting was obviously an important one, and Eibar now hold the tiebreaker over Real Valladolid after beating them earlier in the season, should it come to that. Then, another huge relegation battle result was Osasuna's 1-0 win over a Levante side that are maybe a little distracted by the Copa del Rey. Ante Budimir scored the only goal of that game, and Sergio Herrera saved a José Luis Moraes penalty to mean that Osasuna have now won 3 of their past 4 in La Liga. Oh, and Jimmy Avila is back in training too, so it's been a good few weeks in Pamplona. That's all we've got time for then in this matchday recap. I want to thank all of today's guests. That's Keith Farnan, Ruby Barlow, Paco Pollitt, Roman de Arcaire, and Chris Lail. I've been your host, Jim McTeer, and I hope you've enjoyed reliving the latest La Liga weekend with us. Be sure to follow and interact with us on social media this week as we cover the Spanish sides in Europe. And then we'll be back at the same time next week with our latest matchday recap podcast. Until then, take care and thanks for listening today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.